your talk show for all things automotive. From the latest news to the greatest views.
And the biggest names in rolling iron.
Your host is Brett Hatfield, freelance auto journalist, senior auction analyst for Sports Car Market Magazine and American Car Collector Magazine, writer and editor of ReadTheDriven.com.
And owner of his own small but growing fleet of cool cars.
Get behind the wheel of an hour of car talk starting right now. The Driven Radio Show.
Man, it's just a favorite thing of mine all week long, getting to come in here, hang out with cool car people.
And talk cars,
talk
man.
Talk about fun stuff.
Driven Radio.
Just thrilled to be here. Did you have a good week?
You know what? Actually, I did. I've been cleaning stuff out at home. I still have not gotten that garage cleaned out enough that I can drag something
closer,
in there.
Though.
Bit by bit. I've sold a bunch of stuff on FB, unloaded things that I've hung on to for a while. And it's like, oh, this is really cool. I've got it in a bucket for 12 years. For God's sake, let it go, Mark.
Are you building up that piggy bank?
You know, little bit by little bit.
Is that pig getting fatter?
My mom taught me a lot of things because that woman, she couldn't squeeze blood from a stone, but as God is my witness, she could squeeze money from one.
Ah.
And she's amazing, budgetarily speaking, especially for Poe folk from Southern Mo. But one of the things that she helped me learn was that, you know, every little bit counts.
Every little bit, baby.
I took all that spare change because I save all my spare change, all the pennies. If I find a penny, I do pick it up. And I put it in that little jar, and next thing you know, you dump it out at the bank, and they put $37, $40 into your bank account.
Yeah.
So, you know,
bit by bit,
I'm going to get there.
A little bit here.
It's
going to
happen.
I see a breezeway window or a big old Imperial.
I am hoping. Okay, fine. You're exposing. I've tried so hard not to, you know, I do what my dad did. My dad would always go walking on car lots.
Mm-hmm.
He was just looking.
Yeah.
What you're doing is you're teasing yourself until you're in that frenzy and you're like, oh God, I got to have it.
But in the meantime, you can be learning stuff as you go.
Oh yeah. You're learning how much you want a new car. And I've got several, there's some new ports. There's a few up in Iowa, and a couple in Illinois, and there's this Galaxy that's just so sweet.
I just love that you're so consistent, boy. You never change. I love that.
I want a big one, and I want it soon. But anyway, that's how mine was. And yours was good?
Oh, it was pretty good. Got to drive some different stuff. Had some things happen that we're going to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
But I'd rather discuss some news, so let's get to that.
That sounds like a winner. Hit us.
Outside of our own personal world.
What? Well, there is one outside of it?
Well, this kind of touches my personal world. My another boss, Keith Martin, editor and publisher of Sports Car Market Magazine and American Car Collector Magazine, the two magazines that I work for. About a month ago, Keith had a very mild stroke when he was at home.
Yeah.
And the paramedics got him to the hospital within 30 minutes. They managed to get him treated. And
nice.
Keith is a really healthy guy anyway. He exercises. He takes care of himself. He does all the good things that you and I don't do. You know, he actually cares what he eats and, you know.
Pays some attention to that.
Yeah, pays some attention.
I don't know that I'm guilty of that or not. But
well, it's only a second cheeseburger. It can't possibly hurt me.
Anyway, Keith was in the hospital, albeit very briefly. They moved him to a rehabilitation facility. That's easy for me to say.
Uh-huh.
And he's getting better. He's making improvements.
Awesome.
They've got him in rehab training 4 to 6 hours a day, and he's already able to walk with a cane and a little bit of assistance. He's typing with both hands. He's able to play the piano a little bit again, something that I couldn't do even if I am healthy.
Nice.
He's making progress, so all my love and good wishes to Keith Martin. I'm glad to hear you're doing better, pal. Look forward to having you back. Now, shifting gears, if you'll pardon the pun. At the North American International Auto Show in Detroit in January, Ford unveiled their 2020 Mustang Shelby GT500.
Oh, yeah.
And they're coming with the giant killer baby. They have re-engineered the engine. They've gone to the flat plane crank that is being used in the Shelby GT350, but stuck a massive 2.6-liter supercharger on top of it to crank out earth-moving power. They haven't given specifics yet, and they haven't given a lot of the engineering details out, but they're talking about a car that produces significantly north of 700 ponies.
Oh, God!
Lots more than 700 horsepower. So, you know, you talk about the Chargers and the Challengers, the Hellcats and the Red Eyes that are in the low 8 neighborhood. It looks like Ford's coming for you, baby. They cranked out, got away from that that EcoBoost engine and threw down hard with the flat plane. It's a 5.2 liter V8. And again, a 2.6 liter massive supercharger.
Jiminy.
Now, they're talking about the car running a 0 to 60 in the mid 3 second range. Can you remember when 6 seconds was quick?
Yeah.
It wasn't that long ago, was it?
Oh, my God.
And a quarter mile under 11 seconds.
Holy Moses.
I've had some sport bikes that ran in the mid to high 10 second range. Now, of course, I could never get them to do that, but that's what they tested at. And they are scary fast. I can't fathom it in a car. But Ford's got one coming. The other thing about the Shelby is no manual transmission, at least not yet. No manual transmission.
They're getting under a four?
They're getting under a four. It's an automatic transmission. It's a Tremec-developed seven-speed automatic dual-clutch transmission, you know, the flat.
Double-clutching. You mean like 10-4, good buddy, double-clutching?
I don't think that's they're talking. No, sir.
No,
sir.
All right. It's not a convoy.
seven-speed automatic developed by Tremec. No three pedals. They said, now the Shelby GT350 is now available with an automatic. So what Ford is saying is if you want a manual transmission Shelby Mustang, you need to look at the GT350. If you want an automatic, the GT500 is your car.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
But again, north of 700 horsepower, just
massive. Looking at this thing right now online.
Oh, did you find the video with the four different exhaust notes?
Yes, I did. Okay, I'm gonna be a little bit on the poo-poo platter side of that thing. Those exhaust notes that they have tuned ports so that it has the sound of what a Mustang should sound like. I'm like, I couldn't. That's so fake to me. Why don't you just play an MP3 of what it should sound like and make them dead silent? Because that's just as important. You're pretending.
Be sure you listen to the GT350 and the GT500. It's a flat plane crank. It's a different sound. And it's very much what Ferrari has done for years. You get into the other, the Italian V8s and stuff like that, and you get that different sound. It's a higher pitch. It's more of a wail. And, oh, God, it's
now there's
just,
some
it's
there's
music.
Some ways of changing that sound that I understand. Like your brother-in-law's car, where he can change where the exhaust actually comes out in the pipe. And that helps with, you know, when you're really getting into it and stuff and relieves pressure, blah, blah, blah.
It's similar to that. Mark's, my brother-in-law, another Mark, has electric dumps on his car, like a lot of old hot rodders have. And this is akin to that. What Mustang has done, or what Ford's done with the Mustang, is you've got a quiet mode, you have a normal mode, you have a track mode, and now they've got a fourth screaming performance super. You've got a normal, a quiet, a normal, a sport, and a track mode. And the track mode is everything's out the window. Ugh. We're going to go like hell.
That's an electronic give me attention mode.
Your neighbors are going to vote to have you kicked out of the HOA.
I say that. Now, if I owned one,
yeah,
I might be a little different about it. And by the way, I love what they've done with the front end. That kind of big, wide, kind of open scoop thing. But then you can see some of the Mustang.
If you're going to feed that supercharger, you got to have a way to get the air to it.
Honey, got
to
have a mouth. So, yeah.
Look for that big, bad Stang coming down the road here in late 2019 as a 2020 model.
Who's coming up next?
I'm going to just brag myself up.
Oh, no.
I managed to get a news story that dovetails with our guest. We've got Vernon Estes coming from Vernon Estes Classics. He is a Shelby, a classic Shelby expert, and just all-around knowledgeable guy.
Keeping the theme.
So he's coming up next on Driven Radio. Driven Radio coming up, and we get to talk to I did this on purpose, Mark.
I noticed.
I absolutely put the story in about that Shelby GT500 because I knew we were going to have Mr. Shelby in the studio.
That is kind of awesome.
And, well, yeah. Now, 2 weeks in a row, I'm sitting here breaking my arm, patting myself on the back.
I noticed that, man.
Final news story is the lead-in.
You're doing yoga, obviously. Dang. But well done.
I met Vern Estes through our friend Tom Strongman.
Oh, yeah.
And Vern is a a Shelby expert and a Shelby dealer here in town, and also knows a lot more about Shelbys than either of us. So
now, one of the cool things also about it that you'd mentioned is kind of the part of the era that he really focuses on, which I think is kind of awesome. Because I don't know, Vern, you're looking kind of young there, son. You still got the morning dew where I've burned off to like a horizon of sand and bitterness.
Everything that Vern is an expert on was born before Vern was.
Well, what was it, 62 to 67, right around in there is
yep.
where you're really kind of niches.
Yes, sir. Yep.
That is freaking awesome.
And he's got a cool little dealership here in town called Vernon Estes Classics. Tell us all about your dealership.
Yeah, well, first off, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thrilled you're here.
Yeah, like you guys are saying, I'm kind of a niche dealer. I mainly focus in 62 through 67 Shelby American products, mostly GT350s from 65 to 7. Those are at least the cars that I spend a lot of time chasing. I have a lot of other stuff that either finds me or I happen to find.
Right.
Just kind of in the process of looking for those cars. Anything high performance Ford, though, is kind of what I'm into, but I love pretty much all cars. The dealership is proudly one of the lowest volume car dealers in the world. I try to sell as few cars as I can possibly sell.
You get to call it
reason.
A boutique, don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, boutique. Nice. That's what they're calling it nowadays, nice. Right? It's yeah. a boutique.
I had a Corvette dealership like that before boutique was a thing. It's just I couldn't sell anything.
That was a no volume.
Yeah,
but that's I had no good joke. Cars.
Yeah, so basically those are the cars that I'm passionate about, and that's what I focus kind of all my time looking for. I mean, they're much harder to find now. I mean, they're pretty rare, so they're harder to find than they are to sell.
So,
especially for good cars.
Why Shelby's? How did you become interested in Shelby's?
I used to be interested in pretty much all cars. I mean, my taste in cars actually went down over time, I think. I think I started on much more sophisticated stuff. I was kind of a weird kid growing up. I was the kid in the library at school that was reading about World War II airplanes and military history and trains and anything mechanical in the corner of the library, you know, taking the same books out over and over again. My mom actually used to drop me off at public libraries when I was like 10 years old and just leave me there for hours so I could read books. And
I think you were among friends here.
Yeah.
You're golden.
Yeah, and so that led to somehow that narrowed down to cars, and I started, you know, taking an interest in a lot of like full classic American cars from the 30s and Grand Prix cars from the 20s, a lot of like European stuff, and then somehow it went to muscle cars from there. And then it narrowed to Shelby's, and this all happened like in the span of a year. So I love all cars. It's just that I don't know what it is about Shelby Mustangs. Actually, I do know what it is. I think that Shelby Mustangs are probably, probably the ultimate like mix of an American muscle car and a sports car.
Nice.
Those and Corvettes, of course. I mean, those are kind of the two, you know, hallmark cars. That's what I've always loved.
I'm happy you threw the Corvettes in there.
Yeah, there you go.
That was, yeah, that was very nice of you.
Absolutely. Well,
and you said that you started out collecting memorabilia.
Yeah, when you're 10 years old, you can't afford, you know, cars that go for obscene amounts of money.
You build models. That's a lot of model glue and painted fingers.
Yeah, so you log on to eBay and what was, in hindsight, kind of the early days of eBay.
Right.
Yeah, you get in trouble on eBay and you start buying factory postcards and factory brochures and posters, race team outfits, all sorts of crazy stuff that happens to center around the cars. And I amassed I would work for $10 an hour restoring the cars in downtown Kansas City with a friend of mine named Bob Gaines. And every dollar that I earned there would be used to buy literature and memorabilia having to do with Shelbys and Cobras and Mustangs. And one day I had a collector of the cars that came to me, and he, at that point I had, after 5 or 6 years, probably 1,000 items that I'd kind of like traded into. This big collection of items, just all sorts, binders full of literature. And he wanted to buy the whole thing, and I never advertised it. And I sold it.
How much for
him.
Your women, the girls? I want to buy the girls. How much?
The little girl.
Yeah.
It's, Blues Brothers reference for those of you who might not know.
So I sold him the collection, and in that time also, right around the same time, I had started having other collectors that were coming to me wanting certain pieces of memorabilia, and I was realizing that if I could buy it for X and sell it for 2X, then I could kind of collect it and have fun with it and also, you know, get a little, that was the days before beer money, but we'll call it walking around money.
Capitalize on a passion.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that.
So no, I accidentally became a dealer in it. So
nice.
Wow. There's so many thoughts that go along with this. It's, nobody ever came to me for all my Corvette junk, of course. I never got
realized. How hard were you trying to sell it? I mean, this is a great car. Yeah, I'll sell it to you if I have to.
Yeah. Well, that and there's a reason I'm no longer allowed to be on eBay after a couple of drinks.
You're still allowed on Craigslist, though?
No. eBay, Craigslist, and now iTunes.
Yeah. And don't forget Facebook Marketplace. I'm having to wean myself off of that because I've got so many saved clunkers in there that if I just get enough.
You keep getting the refresh notices. Hey, look, new Imperial. Oh,
yeah, they tease me. It's just wrong.
So how do you go from amassing a really extensive collection of memorabilia and collectibles and all that stuff to being a Shelby American Auto Club concours judge?
Oh, everything, it tends to snowball. It starts with little things, and I end up judging cars. The guy that I work downtown with is a concourse judge, and I started out scribing for him, so I would be the guy that would walk around with a clipboard and write down whatever the judges were saying, and I did that as like a way to learn about the cars. That's why I'm able to buy the cars today and feel pretty confident in my purchases, because Shelby Mustangs are, it's a scary world if you don't know what you're doing.
I can imagine.
Yeah, because you know, you're talking about cars that are worth many multiples of what a normal standard Mustang is worth, yet they share 95-96% of their parts with those normal Mustangs. They're essentially the same car with some performance parts added on, maybe some chassis modifications, maybe right. a special hood, maybe some instrumentation in the interior. I mean, that sounds like you're oversimplifying it, but at the end of the day, you know, it's worthwhile for people to fake these cars now, and some people don't do a very good job of it. Some people do a fairly good job of it, and so you really have to know what you're doing when you're buying them.
And along with knowing what you're looking at, you've found some pretty remarkable Shelbys here and there. Tell us about the...
I'm the typical blind mouse. I find a crumb every now and again. So
I'm talking specifically about a 65 GT350 drag car that was sitting outside in Hawaii.
What?
Yeah, that's an interesting story.
You found it in Hawaii?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay, I want to hear this.
Yeah.
I want to know.
I'm wanting to know how you just go on vacation and, you know, start.
Muck-a-luck-a-luck-a.
So when I first got into the buying and selling of the cars, I took an interest in what's called a drag unit Shelby. Most people don't know it, or at least most people tend to overlook the cars because Shelby American is known as a road racing company, for the most part, and endurance racing. But they did actually build in 65 and 66. They built four what they called drag units from each year. And these four each year, yeah. So basically eight total, four in 65, four in 66. And what the cars were is basically they were the drivetrains. Well, actually, the whole car was sent off to Les Ritchie at Performance Associates, who is kind of the West Coast arm of Ford Performance as far as drag cars go. And he took those cars, put Thunderbolt-style traction bars on them, which is a pretty serious thing, completely rebuilt the engines and transmissions with straight-cut gears. The heads on the engines were custom milled. They basically had R model engines in them. The rear ends in 65 were 514s, and in 66 they toned it down to 486s. And they still had, like, in 65 and 6, they still had, like, the aluminum gearboxes that were common in Thunderbolts as well. So they were pretty fast cars. They were basically full interior, but and glass in them. Yeah, and they were running 127 miles an hour, somewhere around that in the quarter, which in 65 and 6 is extremely fast. Because those are not drag, you know, 65s and 6s are not drag cars.
Interior and glass.
With a 289 K-code V8. I mean, it's pretty quick.
What's that translate to in an ET? Is that low 11s?
I think it's low 12s, think, on those cars.
But a buck 30.
Yeah, close to it. Which is really amazing when you think about it. Because, again, they're meant to, GT350s are supposed to be road racing cars.
Yeah.
And so I took an interest in those drag units, number one, because everybody else seemed to overlook them. Nobody seemed to research them very much. And when you look at, like, the holy grail of 65 Shelbys, those are R models. So full race road racing cars. Well, they made 36 R models, or 37, depending on who you ask, I suppose. They only made eight drag units from 2 years, so they're over four times rarer than the R models. So mm-hmm. And of the 2 years, only three exist from each year. So actually, there's only six in the world. Two have been destroyed from each year.
So destroyed or parted out or both?
Well, in 65, one is lost and really not accounted for. It was supposedly lost in a street race to a I believe Sacramento firefighter is the story that I've heard. And then in 66, one of those cars.
Titled out.
Yeah.
Pink slip.
Well, here's a crazier one. And I've heard whisperings that who knows that car might exist, but those are Southern California people that say that. And I don't, who knows if they're, you know, who knows? They're the ones that are in the area. So maybe it's hiding somewhere. But then there was one in 66 where there was, like you see in like an old movie, somehow there was like a trail of gasoline that got ignited and led all the way to the car, and the car exploded and got put in a landfill, and it's all completely documented. So of 66, wow. There's only three as well.
Oh my God.
Since there's only six, I started just kind of trying to research the cars and learn more about them. I contacted, you know, various owners of the cars, and I found out that one of them was delivered new to Hawaii. And I thought, well, that's an odd place to have a 65 drag car.
Not a lot of drag strips in Hawaii.
Yeah, just, all just vertical. Like two. Yeah.
It certainly is, and we're going to hear the back half of this story in just a second. We're here with Vernon Estes of Vernon Estes Classics, and wow, too much cool stuff.
No doubt.
I knew this was going to be a home run. We'll be right back with more Driven Radio. Back with more Driven Radio, and our guest this evening, Vernon Estes of Vernon Estes Classics. You can find that at vernonestesclassics.com.
Or in Overland Park.
In Overland Park.
In OPP.
In sunny, balmy, 12-degree, right. Sleet falling out of the sky, glazed. Overland Park.
Yeah, look for the palm trees. Oh, I'm sure you'll find them.
They're going to be bent over from the ice. Vernon, we were talking about you finding a one of three 1965 Shelby GT350 drag car in Hawaii.
Yeah.
So you've been speaking to other owners. How did you eventually track this thing down?
Well, I just started researching the cars and figuring out where they all were. And as things pertain to 65, one of them was a factory drag car and has been in Ohio for a very long time. And one of them is owned by a friend of mine in Washington State who also has one of the 66s. And then the third one,
wow,
you know, both of those cars being sort of unobtainable cars, they're owned by pretty well-known collectors. The third one just seemed to have been delivered to Hawaii, which I thought was an unusual location to get one of these cars. These were extremely expensive new. I mean, they were not cheap. 65 Shelbys in general were pretty expensive, but a drag unit was a very expensive car.
So who was the buyer in Hawaii?
Well, that's an interesting part of the story. There apparently was no buyer. There was a guy who I had figured out. There was a fairly wealthy kid who was given a Mercury dealership by his dad, supposedly. that's what I understand of it, even though it's hard to get any details out.
Hang on just a second. Look, we've talked a lot of times about me being way spoiled because I managed to weasel an old Corvette out of my dad.
But a whole Merc dealership?
But I didn't get a dealership.
And in the mid-60s, right?
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
You got the big bad daddy Mercs. Oh, wow. Yeah, baby.
Okay, I can see you salivating already.
I'm feeling a little tingly. Good stuff. So we've got this Merc dealership thing.
And a reason why I've sort of assumed that this is the person who was supposed to have brought this car over is because this same gentleman ordered multiple AFX Mercury Comets in 65 as well. So he was big into drag racing.
Uh-huh.
And they all raced at a place called Hawaiian Raceway Park. But apparently this car was sent to the only Shelby American dealer in Hawaii, and nobody bought it. So it was ordered and nobody bought it, which is really kind of a snafu, you know, considering that Hawaii doesn't really have the biggest market for these cars, probably. And
they just
mailed them a drag unit that's extremely expensive. You know, it's like, as a dealer, what are you going to do with that once it's on the showroom floor? It's like one of the modern Cobra Jets, except harder to sell.
So it languishes on a floor.
Languished on the floor for a long time. Eventually, it's not very well documented, but eventually they think that a salesman bought it, supposedly.
Okay.
Fast forward 7-8 years, and the listed owner for the car was a guy who bought it in 1974. And when I looked in the registry, he buys it in 1974, and then it had a sentence after it that said present whereabouts not known. So I figured, well, he doesn't own it anymore, but he might know where that car is.
Right.
So I looked him up and wrote him a letter. I just wrote him a typed up letter and signed it and sent it to an address that supposedly he lived at and hoped. And I heard back from him.
Oh, wow.
And he said, I've got the car and I've had it since 74. And I don't want to sell it, but I'd be happy to talk to you about it. So I called him, and we struck up a friendship. This is actually when I first started buying and selling the cars. And so I would call him every couple months, and we would just talk on the phone about the car, about drag units, about Shelbys in general. To him, he just bought it as a 65 Shelby. He actually didn't think that he knew it was a drag car, a factory drag car, but he didn't necessarily, he thought it was special just because it was a 65 Shelby, one of 562 made that year.
He didn't appreciate what, he didn't really understand the depth of what he had.
He knew that was special.
The significance of what he had.
He knew that was special, but I think that it was sort of just an interesting footnote compared to like what the car was, whereas like, in my opinion, that's sort of like what the whole car is. Like as if a 65 Shelby is not special enough.
So while you're talking to him, are you trying to not tell him how special the car is?
Oh no, I told I think he knew why, you know, I was so interested in it. But I thought it was a special car, and I was just more intrigued by, here's this guy that bought a drag car in 1974 and he drove it on the street. And so this car had 46,000 miles on it.
Oh, that's awesome.
Which you think is like, you know, if somebody walked up to any classic car and saw the odometer at 46K, they would say, man, this is a low mileage car. Well, when you consider that it still had the 514s in it, that's like the highest mileage drag car in the world. And here's the crazier part is that I asked him what kind of condition it was, and he said, well, we restored it in the early 90s. He restored it himself.
Uh-oh.
So I thought, that's interesting. And, you know, fast forward about 3 years, I called him one day, and the first thing I hear on the phone is, I think I'm ready to sell the car.
Oh, my gosh.
And I said, really? Because I never thought it. He told me he would never sell it.
That
You know, never even a consideration. So I jumped on a plane like a day later and with the deposit.
After you figured out if you could, you know, mortgage some relatives.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Sold one of my kidneys and else that I had.
9 pints of blood.
Yeah.
I drink nothing but water, baby. Nothing but water.
Wow. So, and you went and got it.
Went and got it. Yes. Yeah, so, well, nice. That's... sort of went and got it. Basically, what happened was, this is right around the time
that
I was...
the Russians moved in.
This is actually right around the time that I was going to propose to my then-girlfriend.
Oh.
So I figured, you know, everybody's doing all these stupid things on Facebook with proposals. I'm like, I'm going to kill two birds with one stone here. So I'm going to Hawaii anyway. All I have to do is buy one more plane ticket, and we can have a Hawaiian proposal.
Aww.
So we go there for 2 days. The first day, I go to see the car, and I think I'm going to buy the car. We walk. I come up to his house, and his house was up... this is all a true story. I'm just going to preface this with that, is that this whole thing isn't kind of crazy enough. I drive up to his house. It's at the top of a, I don't know if you'd call it a mountain or a hill, but it's a really big hill if you call it a hill. On one side of this hill is Pearl Harbor. On the other side, you're looking over Waikiki. So you're like way up high on Honolulu.
Nice. My man's got not only a 1 of 3 Shelby, but he lives in a house that overlooks Pearl Harbor.
Yeah. But it's interesting. It was just a normal neighborhood. Uh-huh. I drive up to the address, and I look at the front of the house, and there's a car under a cover underneath a little shelter. I mean, like a handmade shelter. And you can't really tell it's a Mustang, but since you know what you're looking at, you can kind of see that it's a fastback Mustang. But anybody else driving by it would have just thought it was something weird underneath the cover. And there, underneath 3 blue tarps, and 2 car covers underneath with plywood sheets leaned up against the car to keep chickens and rodents and whatever else they have in Hawaii.
Oh my God.
With those leaned up against the car is this drag car. And it just looks like a normal 65 Shelby, steel wheels, the back sitting up a little bit higher like a drag car, but you would have never known. And when he uncovered this car, he actually got really emotional. He had it since 74. He realized he was about to sell it.
So
and he
hard,
looked at me and he said, I can't sell you the car.
Oh no.
And I just said, okay, you know, you can't, like, of course it's disappointing.
Oh,
but,
dude,
like,
you should have said, hey, this,
you see this beautiful woman? She's not going to marry me unless we roll away in that car.
Oh, I came home that day to the hotel just completely depressed.
Oh, I bet you were.
It was the proposal was fine and everything, but in that situation, it's like you can't get upset at him because then you'll never get the car. You know you'll never get the car at that point if you get upset.
Hi, honey, here's a ring. You want to get married?
And I felt bad for him. It was a special thing in his life. So he had had the car a long time. He had great memories of him and his wife in the car. You know, like I said, 46,000 miles with 514s. I can't quite wrap my head around that.
That's amazing.
I'm envisioning a worn out Amoco card.
Does he still own it to this day?
No, I mean, what happened was I ended up going back to canceled all the shipping arrangements for the car, went back to the upper 48, and then about a year later we go on the honeymoon. And
did you go back to
Hawaii? She wanted to go to Maui, so we go to Maui, but I just said, why don't we stop in Honolulu, we'll see Pearl Harbor, Of course, she knows exactly why I'm suggesting that. You know, so we go back to the owner's house.
Has she come to expect that everything you ever do nice for her has an ulterior motive?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I'm just really thrifty. So if I'm gonna if I'm gonna spend the money, I want to make sure it counts for multiple.
It's gonna be a win-win. Trust me.
Yeah. So we go back and we visit the owner. And as we didn't talk about the car at all, we were just sitting at his. He's a friend of mine, so we were just sitting at his kitchen table, and I'm walking out the door. We had gone to Pearl Harbor, went to his house, walking out the door so we could catch a plane to Maui. And I turned back and I said, "If you ever want to sell that used car in the driveway, you know who your first call is." And he says, "I'm ready. I'm going to sell it to you." And at the time, I was like, I'll call you in like 3 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, like, because number one, I couldn't take the car right then anyway. He had to set up shipping. And number two, it's like, I really don't want to do this again, you know, if he's not actually ready. So I'll call you in a couple weeks and we'll just touch base again. I called him in a couple weeks. He said, "I promise this time I'm ready to sell the car." So I went back to Hawaii a third time.
Oh my God. Third time's a charm, man.
And finally got the car. And it was, you know, sometimes I enjoy trying to find the cars. I enjoy chasing the cars. To me, finding them and buying them is every bit as much fun, if not more fun, than actually owning the cars. I mean, you know, I think a lot of people feel that way when the process of if they decide they want a certain classic car, they enjoy looking for it.
Oh, the discovery of it, you know, then learning
the
about
new
it.
Thing. Yep.
And becoming knowledgeable and then really hungry. So, big question.
Tell us about your dealership.
Yeah, we got about a minute left. Fill us in now that we finally got to that part, because it was a great story.
That's one story. I want to hear all these other stories, so we're going to have you back.
Cool. That'd be wonderful. I'd love to come back.
Tell us about your dealership real quick.
Yeah. So basically, I just bought my first commercial building here in Overland Park, and so from now on, I'm going to be halfway legitimate. And, it's a smaller building, and like I said, I buy and sell as few cars as possible. I like to really focus on like high-quality Shelbys, mostly GT350s, some GT500s, some later-year cars. I mean, I just bought a 69 350 four-speed air car, which is uncharacteristic for me because I like.
I love that he said later year car.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
So you're not talking about stuff that are new classics that have been, you know, built recently. You're talking about the real deal from the time.
Every once in a while, I'll buy like a continuation Cobra or something.
Yeah.
But mostly I'm buying stuff that is 65 to 7 GT350. And so I do a little bit of consignment. Mostly it's buying and selling and working on the cars and just having fun and.
Nice.
Vernon, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
We want to have you back. We want to hear more stories. And wow.
You hear about the 66 drag car next time.
Absolutely. Oh, just amazing.
Indiana Shelby Jones. Overland Park Jones.
We've been talking with Vernon Estes of Vernon Estes Classics. You can find them at www.vernonestesclassics.com or find them at Vernon Estes Classics on Facebook. Vern, thanks for your time.
Hey, thank you very much.
Really appreciate it. Thank you very much. Coming up on Driven Radio, we've got to. We're going to crawl out.
Stuff's finally happening.
We're going to crawl out of the icebox. We got car events coming up, and I'll tell you a little bit about all the great crap I've had go on this week, car wise. Coming up on Driven Radio. Back with more Driven Radio. God, is that Vernon? Does he know?
That was amazing. And he's, you know, I don't mean to, I'm trying not to be ageist here. Dude's young. He's in his late 20s. And he's smart. And
to have that depth of knowledge at that age.
Yeah. During the break, we were chatting and it's just like, my God, this cat knows.
I don't even know that I got that depth of knowledge now. I'm very envious.
Cool dude.
Great interview. And, man, I'm dying to have him back. I want to hear more of that stuff.
Well, I want to go to the Vernon Estes Classics. I want to go to his place because some of the pictures, I'd like to see what he's got that he hasn't fixed up yet. He's got all those shots, if you go to the website, beautiful cars. But there was the one that you pointed me to, and then I'm like, oh my God, there's that and this and this. There was the 58.
58 Impala.
Oh God, that thing is lovely. And then a Nash, a 52 Nash station wagon.
Well,
just crispy mint.
Well, it shows the depth of knowledge he's got. He knows it's not just Shelby's. He's got a first-gen Bronco on there. Have to call Seth Burgett and tell him.
And you know me, I like that little kind of twisted weirdness. He's got, you know, these beautiful muscle cars where you're like, oh my God, yeah. Oh, absolutely. But then the ones that he's got outside of are kind of quirky. And a couple of Broncos. Well,
Well, and the Nash was cool. What a neat little wagon, and you don't ever see that stuff.
No, you do not. Gorgeous. So.
Just once in a great while. All righty. Well, I thought I was going to, because last week was warm and the weather was nice, and I thought I was going to get everything out that's been waiting for the weather to turn nice. And, you know,
Midwest is such a tease.
Get the flat spots out of the tires and get the engines warmed up. Uh-huh. You know, if you let old cars sit long enough and you don't drive them, the seals dry out and then they start to drip.
One of the worst things you can do for them, yeah.
Well, I mean, it's like anything else.
If you let them sit too long.
They atrophy just like muscles will.
Yeah, that's like me in the couch.
So.
Damn you, Netflix.
Hey, I got the same thing.
Some flat spots.
Oh, no kidding. And others that you wish were flatter.
Anyway,
I digress. Got the Bronco out last week, and I was driving it, and I was hustling to get here and got caught up in traffic slowing down for they were doing some impromptu road repairs, which I-35 desperately needs, fixing all the little pothole patches. Yeah. And traffic was slowing down a bit, and it was pretty tight, and the guy that was behind me was following me pretty close. I got on the brakes hard, and I got tapped from behind twice in the old—
Not good in traffic or prison.
No.
It's all wrong.
No, all wrong.
All wrong.
Anyway, thank God for the old Bronco. We pull off the side of the road, and this guy's driving a crap box Chevy truck, and the spare tire and that giant oversized the spare tire carrier on the tailgate and that big oversized 33 that I had sitting on there saved the truck.
Woo-hoo!
The other guy, it kind of folded up one of his headlights a little bit, but he got out. I'm not kidding, man. He looked like he probably hadn't bathed in a while, and got out, and he looks at my truck and goes, "Well, you ain't got nothing." And I said, "Are you okay?" He says, "Yeah, it's just a headlight." Jumped back in his truck and took off. And I'm standing there thinking, "You don't have any insurance, do you?"
Yeah, no insurance. there's no seal on that bottle next to him.
Yeah, yeah, that one's been cracked.
Yeah.
I got to get.
Yeah, anyway, looking good. See you later.
So, you know, I thought, okay, well, let's go tuck the Bronco away. And drag out the old Impala. It's warm. It's going to be nice this weekend. So Vlad the Impaler saw the light of day, took her out. And Friday night, showing off for a buddy of mine, did a speed shift from second to third and jammed the linkage again.
Again.
I've done this before. But since that car wasn't originally a four-speed car, and it is now, there's not a heck of a lot of room in the transmission tunnel. Things are kind of tight, and you can jam them up if you're being
aggressive. Yeah, vigorous.
Well, vigorous.
Yes, vigorous.
It's not as robust.
I was vigorating.
As one might like.
It happens.
I was vigorating. That's a new verb. Anyway, classic car weekend didn't quite go the way I thought it would, but nothing terminal, nothing fatal. Everything can be fixed. And I got to get it fixed because we're coming out of all the snow and ice weather that we're back into now.
And dude, you found some cool events coming up.
Believe it or not, there are car guys who are itching to get out of the house as bad as we are. And so we've got car events coming up in March, starting March 3rd in Kansas City, Missouri. Crossroad Cars going to do a monthly car show.
Monthly?
Monthly.
Sweet.
Looks like they're shooting for the first Sunday of every month. There's one coming up on March 3rd. With a $10 donation to St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital after, looks like they're going to establish a $500 student scholarship. That's terrific.
So $10 per car, and then like 10% of the proceeds go to these things. This is cool.
And it's going to be at 300 West 19th Terrace in Kansas City, Missouri. For more information, you need to go check the Crossroads Cars page on Facebook.
Yeah.
Hey, March 9th, Kansas in North Kansas City, there's a spring car meet at Mackin Park, Howell Street, and Clark Ferguson Drive. Now, they're saying that this is a tentative address.
I wonder if that means we kind of haven't gotten permission quite yet.
Or maybe somebody's holding out for something else.
But it's still a great idea.
Well, it's a spring car meet. Fortunately, all the things that are going to show up have wheels there do move. So if the address changes, we'll keep you posted. You can find more information about that at their Facebook.com events page.
You got something noted here. Stage DJ and laser light show.
Laser light show. They said it's 4 to 8. If it's after 8,
this is awesome.
We're gonna have a car rave.
Yeah, I have a 1955 Buick right next to this, 1992 Honda. Hey, groovy.
Don't knock it. I saw a '58 Ford at that KCI car show last year that had lasers and light show going on inside the car.
Dude.
Inside the car.
When I was 18, that would have been wicked cool.
Yeah, it's your own Pink Floyd show, baby. Sit back, relax, and yeah, I know.
Map goes to seed and hello.
I know the mushrooms taste funny. Eat them anyway.
It's the universe.
March 22nd through the 24th in St. Joseph, Missouri, the second annual Midwest Motorama at the St. Joseph Civic Center, 100 North 4th Street. Car and bike rat rod show, lots of classes and awards and giveaways. Says contact the show chairman at 816-390-0243. The producer at 816-390-6364 or email Midwest Motorama, MOTORRAMA, at AOL.com.
You know, they got some pretty cool car clubs up there. There's a dude up there, and I won't single him out on this one, but he and I just met him, you know, at a random event. And he has worked hard to help find some classic, you know, sleazy rust bucket that I can afford, and was just the coolest guy. Okay, why not? Knuckle Draggers was the name of the club. The Knuckle Draggers Car Club.
Hey, I like
just,
it.
Just the coolest guy and a great group of people. And most of their get-togethers that they do around St. Joe all benefits charity.
You know, my employer at my another job over at the magazines, Keith Martin, has said that old cars are a magnet for great people.
Seem to be.
And that's one of the things about being involved in this hobby and the culture is you meet fantastic people. They're always willing to help, and you can't believe how many of them will go out of their way to do something for you just because. Yeah. Last but not least, March 30th in Olathe, Kansas, the second annual Olathe Advanced Technical Center Car and Bike Show at OATC 611 North Nelson Road. 12 noon to 3 o'clock p.m., OATC has programs in automotive, welding, construction, and culinary arts. And proceeds go to Funding Skills USA Participation. For more information, call 913-780-7026.
And everybody show up for that. My son graduated
Cool.
OATC.
Very cool.
He was in the construction part, and I went to one of their car shows because he was helping to walk people around and do stuff and help tour the facilities. And it's a great program, great part of Olathe.
Well,
and
love to see.
And the kids are cool, and the cars are wicked.
Love to see kids learning skills. Well, that's it for us this week.
Boom.
Man, flew by.
Absolutely.
Absolutely flew by. Be sure to give us a listen at Driven Radio on Facebook and at readthedriven.com. We're working on a new website for the radio show.
Yeah.
But until then, we'll stay with Read the Driven. I'm Brett Hatfield, co-host Mark Groves.
Woo-hoo!
Thanks for being with us.